Hey everyone, this is Steven Schleicher.
And Zach Wolf.
We are about to discuss a movie called The Invitation.
Yes.
That is currently out. Now, because this movie's out and it's a small independent film, many of you may not have seen it, and there's a twist to this. And we talk about the twist and we do spoil this movie. So just so you know, if you're kind of interested in seeing this movie, we talk the heck out of it, and we don't want you to be upset if the film gets ruined because we reveal a twist ending in it. So you've been warned, right? Spoiler effects, Zach?
Yeah, spoilers are in effect. Welcome to this week's episode of Zach on Film. Joining me, like always this week, is the one and only Steven Schleicher.
Hello.
Steven, last week we kind of ran down some of the biggest movies that will be coming out this summer.
Mm-hmm.
This week we're actually going to talk about a movie, give it a good talking over.
Yeah.
This film, not one of the biggest films, it is actually recording to the box office numbers, currently at 6,374th for opening day box office totals.
That doesn't surprise
me. No, it's way down the line. Not a big blockbuster release.
I got a lot of buzz at South by Southwest.
Yeah, it's got some buzz. This movie originally released back in at Fantastic Fest in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
It then got a real big kickoff at South by Southwest earlier this month. And then now it's kind of out on iTunes. And that is from director Karen Kusama, who originally did Girl Fight, the Aeon Flux movie, and Jennifer's Body.
Right.
And this is The Invitation.
Man, The Invitation is a story about a man who's been divorced from his wife after the loss of their son.
Mm-hmm.
He has been invited to a dinner party, and it's kind of a getting together of a bunch of their old friends that they haven't seen in years.
Mm-hmm.
And David, I think that's his name. No, Will. Will thinks that his wife is acting a little weird, and her husband is acting a little weird.
Yeah.
And the two strangers that they've never met before are acting a little weird. And Will is concerned about his new girlfriend, Kira, and the rest of his friends. And then the party gets interesting.
Yeah. So the setting for this film is kind of a pretty posh house up in
Hollywood
Hills in L.A.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I would say, kind of well off to do people. Definitely,
right.
Will's wife Eden, who is now remarried. They have this very nice house there. Everyone seems pretty well off. They feel pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this dinner party, and the film's
been
the
like
film. Yeah,
super depressed, and he's still suffering from the loss of his son.
Yeah, which
was like 3 years ago.
I think
something
three.
Yeah,
and then. It said it's been about 2 years since they've seen this Eden and David, which obviously causes some hesitation on Will's part of it, mainly because, in the first couple minutes of the film, or first really parts of dialogue, you realize Will used to be married to this woman.
Mm-hmm.
They got divorced, and she started seeing this other dude in a grief session while they were still married.
Right.
And then they kill a coyote.
Yeah.
And he beats
death
a coyote.
Well, they run over it with the car, and he doesn't want it to suffer, so
he kills it.
Yeah.
Which kind of sets the tone early on for this film.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the thing is, through Will's grief, he just starts noticing this weird behavior by Eden and David, and then with their this other girl, Sadie, who the first time Will sees her, she's like half naked, standing in the hallway, and he's like, "What's going on here?" And then another guy shows up, and I forget what his name is.
It's like Phil or something.
Phil, yeah, something like that. Sorry, I'm
no, and even before that, when Will's first walking into the house, he sees a little boy playing with toys.
Yeah, he's having
that
a
is,
flashback.
Yeah, he's having a flashback, and it kind of happens for the first probably half of the film. That Will has a few flashbacks that we kind of learn about their interesting past, because it's definitely weird right at the bat. Will walks in, and he meets his friends, and then he sees his ex-wife, and then her current husband walks in, and the weird, I was like, they look too similar. It is too weird for her to be married to this guy. They look too similar.
Yeah, Pruitt is this other guy's
name. Yeah, Pruitt. And then throughout the first part of the film, these flashbacks, you learn that Eden tried to kill herself, and like Will had to stop her, and so there's all this, and you start really kind of quickly getting into this weird emotional thing that kind of is the underbed of this entire story,
and
which provokes the weird feeling that
Will's
having.
And then at the same time, Will's like, oh, I haven't been in this house in 3 years. You guys have been away for 2 years. You got iron bars all over your windows. And they're like, yeah, you know, just never, you want to be safe. And then as guests come in, he's sitting on the steps talking to another friend, Gina, who's there at the party and just trying to talk about stuff. He notices that as David lets somebody in, he's locking the door. And he's like, why are you locking the door? He's like, oh, you know, there was a break-in.
Right.
And things are getting weird. And then he notices that his ex-wife is popping some barbiturates and pills. And he's like, this something is not right in this house. And then we get to the point of the invitation where they're like, hey, look, you know, because they're like, oh, this invitation, this isn't that some kind of weird cult thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where everybody does this. And they kind of just play it off subtly. They don't really talk about, because this card that they get, this invitation that they get to come to the party is really nice and fancy.
Right.
And they're not really saying, oh, this is some cult thing, that this is what this is tied to. And Eden and David are like, Eden and David are like, hey, no, just watch this video. And everybody gathers around to watch this video. And they're Dr. Death guy is just like, oh, you'll all move on to another place. And they sit there and they watch this woman die on this video that they're showing.
Yeah.
And of course, all the Pruitt and Sadie and David and Eden are all happy about this. And the guests are kind of like a little uncomfortable.
What the hell's going on? Yeah.
And then they start talking about, oh, you know, you just got to let things go and do what you want. And things kind of get a little weird and uncomfortable where Eden starts kissing a friend of theirs. I think it's Eden, or maybe it's Sadie. I forget which one.
Starts kissing. Well, they both do, I guess.
Starts kissing, was it Claire?
Yeah.
Starts kissing Claire, and then it just becomes really uncomfortable. And at this point in the movie, after watching where they're just showing them this kind of initiation movie, I'm like, I'm ready to get out of this party if this were me.
Right.
And even Gina, who's one of the guests, is like, you know what, this party's too much for me. I need to leave.
Yeah,
this
she
is
does
just
leave
too
then.
Weird.
Yeah.
Or does she?
Well, we'll get that. I want to say, up to that point in film, like when they show them film, like, oh, it's a cult thing. They've like all heard about this, which is really interesting too.
And I mean, you hear about it. I mean, for another project, I've been looking at, you know, cults in America, and there have not been a lot of doomsday death cults in the U.S. in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
So if something like this were to pop up, a lot of people would probably be talking about it. I mean, of course we had David Koresh, and I forgot which slipped my mind, but the people that killed themselves so that they go up to the spaceship back in 2000. And I want to say that's probably one of the last big cult mass deaths that we had in the U.S. So for people to be talking about, you know, about this, I mean, you could go into a bunch of different cults.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about true religious cults. That's, you know, this is something that everyone's familiar with, and they're kind of making joke of it. And everyone's like, oh no, you don't understand it. It's really cool. It really helped us with therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It really can. And then they start all recounting about the deaths. Now, of course, Eden went through the loss of their son. David lost his wife. Pruitt admits that he killed his wife in a fit of anger went to jail, which, you know, this cult, they had their retreats in Mexico, which I think even as a convict that has been released from doing his duty, I don't think he would be able to go to Mexico.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
I don't think he would
be.
I don't know what those rules are. That seems so weird. And I don't remember what Sadie's big hang-up is.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
But they're all down there to try to grieve.
Yeah. And so when that happens, I was really interested because if you've watched the trailer for The Invitation, it definitely is just playing up the invitation to a dinner party and how it's weird that his ex-wife, they've been gone for a while, and they just invite, and that's just weird.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even bring up this cult type thing in the trailer. So that was like the first initial kind of twisty doo-ha of this film. And, you know, up to that point, even through that, it's not shown as like a doomsday death cult. It's kind of like we are getting through grief and we can accept the grief and move past it. And death is okay. And, you know, we're just going
and
through
then,
it.
And then if you start paying, you watch this a couple of times. I just watched it the one time.
I started watching it for a second time. I didn't have time to finish it.
But then after they've watched that, if you start really listening to what everyone's talking about to the rest of their guests, I mean, I'm talking about the main four.
Yeah.
They're talking about, oh, you know, it's cool. You know, we need to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
They have this massive dinner that is just loaded down.
With $8.5 million bottles of wine.
You know, almost like a Last Supper.
Yeah.
They're celebrating things. They're telling people, hey, we all need to grieve. We all need to let go. We all need to fulfill our wishes because, you know, we're not going to be here forever.
Mm-hmm.
And Will starts reading all this stuff and he's like, I think they're going to kill us.
Well, that's interesting. You read it. I read through this. I'm like, I got about halfway through it. I'm like, I was like, I think Will is paranoid. And I think the film is portrayed as these people seem cuckoo to Will,
right,
but they're actually just almost like sans negative emotions or just positive energy. They're just going forward.
Right.
Will is too paranoid to be at this dinner.
It could be that he's paranoid or super uncomfortable or whatever, but there's also, and I was reading a review or something about this, The Invitation earlier, and they're talking about how this is kind of like commentary on party etiquette, in a sense, because people are too afraid that when topics get out of hand at a party, that because you don't want to offend anyone, you stick around and you kind of go through these motions. And so everyone's like, no, Will, you're freaking out. You know, you're the one that's emotionally upset. Your wife has moved on.
Mm-hmm.
You need to move on too. We know it's uncomfortable that you're in this house. And he's like, no, something freaking weird is going on, to the point where he even sees David light this red lamp outside in the backyard, and he just think, I don't know what's there, but I mean, he is in grieving in his son's bedroom trying to make this last connection with his son. And then he comes out and they're like, hey, let's have a cocktail. Everyone's like, let's have a cocktail.
Mm-hmm. Well, after he watches David light this red lamp, right, he pulls out his laptop and watches another video from Mr.
Death
Cult Man, and it's like, the time is now, or I can't.
Right.
It seemed like it could have been, you know, our emotions are good. You're fine. Accept this. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can also read it like, it's about ready to happen. It's time. Yeah. And it seemed to me, I don't know how you read this. When I watched it, it was like, it kind of felt like, is Will into this now? Like, he sees them calm. He just had this like emotional breakdown. It seems like he's into it. And I think Pruitt gets him to go upstairs. It kind of seems like, you know, everyone's waiting for you. It's time.
Right.
And it seemed like Pruitt thinks, oh, Will must have probably knew he watched this video. I think Will's on board now.
Maybe.
Because he had like this, of course, Pruitt is freaking weird.
Yeah, Pruitt is really weird. The actor who plays him has been around forever and is really great in these really creepy roles.
Yeah.
But Will, I think, watches this and is like, okay, I guess I understand what's going on. This is still weird to me, but I've had this catharsis of letting go of my son and having this one last happy memory of us together. And then he goes downstairs, and again, if I'm mistaken, I'm mistaken, but I could swear that David gets up and starts quoting from the video, and that's what tips Will off finally, that, holy crap, they're going to kill us. And so he's knocking the glasses out of everybody's hands, smashing them. Everybody at the party now is upset. There's like a dozen people, maybe not a dozen, maybe 10 people.
Yeah, like, six. Oh, I guess with the other people, it's probably like 10.
And everybody's like getting pissed at him because this is the last straw that they've had to put up with his crap all night. One of the girls does drink hers down. One of the guests does drink hers down. And then, Sadie starts attacking Will and saying, you're ruining everything. And he pushes her and she hits her head on the edge of a counter.
Okay. So at that point I was like, oh, Will's, I kept on going back and forth. Is Will freaking out or are these people like insane?
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm like, oh, Will's just freaking out again. Cause he did the
cool
editing. I'm like, Will's freaking out. And then I really thought it, because Sadie comes after him, like, you're ruining it, and he throws her like Pruitt did, hits her head, and starts like, I'm like, oh my God, this is what they're doing the whole time.
Yeah, and then, because I don't know if, that was the part of the movie that seemed a little weird for me, because Pruitt related this whole story about how he got mad and hit his wife, and she died by hitting her head on the counter, and then these exact same things happen. To David and Sadie, and it seemed really weird and almost like redundant or repetitive.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, Will is making the same mistakes that Pruitt did or anything like that. It's just this weird repetitive moment of story that almost didn't need to be there or needed to be changed or something. I mean, Sadie hitting her head is and not falling on the floor is important because she starts bleeding and everyone's freaking out. And I guess one of Will's friends is a doctor and he's checking her out. We hear Will's girlfriend Gina say she's not breathing. He's like, no, she's breathing. No, we're talking about this other girl over here who's now foaming at the mouth, passed out, dead. And then when he's trying to revive this other girl.
So hold on. Right before you get to that, I thought still that because earlier in the day or in the night she took some cocaine. I'm like, what if it was just some weird reaction to cocaine? I'm
really
like,
but at this point,
yes, I'm still like, I can't figure out what this movie is trying to do to me, because I constantly think this movie, and I still think it's trying to use new information to get you sucked back into thinking they're like a horrible cult and that something bad's going to happen.
I kept thinking
that they're like just an unreliable narrative type story
maybe,
of a character.
But, I mean, the actors and the director, Karen Kusama, are brilliant at telegraphing Will's paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm right there with him. I'm like, I would have gotten that the minute that they showed that death video. I would have been like, you know what?
Oh, well,
I forgot I got something to do tomorrow.
Yeah.
And
I'm gone. Yeah.
And a lot of people say that. And even in an interview with Kusama, she's like, yeah, my friends watched it and said they would have gotten the hell out of there too. And she's like, no, you wouldn't have, because I've been at those parties with you. Not, I guess, death cult parties, but you don't leave when things get uncomfortable. You stick around. And I guess that's part of the thing that she's trying to stress, or that her husband and his partner, Phil Hay and Matt Manfredi, are the writers of this script. And she's like, no, that's not what you guys would do. And so that's kind of what's playing out here. And so while the doctor guy is trying to revive his friend, David comes in and shoots him in the back of the head.
Yeah, because freaking at that moment, I'm like, oh, dear God, this is going to get real bad.
And then they start shooting everybody or strangling people or hacking them or beating them or whatever.
Good.
And so it's up to Will and his girlfriend, Gina, are running through this house. And of course, they can't get out because all the doors are locked.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get out the windows because the windows are barred.
Yep.
And the sliding glass doors out the back. At one point, they're hiding in a room where they knew that, where Will was like, there's a door back here, we can get out here. They get there and the door's been sealed off.
Yeah.
There's been some remodeling.
Ugh.
As they're looking out the window, they see one of the guests crash through a sliding glass door and attempt to escape. But he gets out there and then Pruitt just like beats him to death.
Yeah.
And it is just this murder. And at one point, Kate shoots Will in the shoulder and then shoots herself in the stomach, because this is, you know, it's like, hey, not only are we going to kill everybody here because they need to let go of their stuff and we'll all be reunited on the other side because everybody here has gone through some kind of loss, we're also going to kill ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's just dying left and right.
Oh, it's crazy. Like, it turned so hard.
It turns
so
into a very
fast.
Bloody.
It got like straight up violent.
Yeah. In the end, Gina, Will, and another one of their friends, I forget which, what, it's not Miguel, it is, must be Dave, not Ben, maybe that's who it is.
Yeah.
Ben make it out of the house. They kill everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Sadie is kind of, I forgot who did something to her.
That was weird. I don't know what happened to Sadie. I'm guessing it must have been Ben or something, but she was about ready to die.
Yeah, there's some, and maybe she had drank a little bit too. I don't know, but there's some weirdness in this last little 10, 15 minutes of the movie where the house is not laid out right, in my opinion, in the way that they're showing us the film. And while they're editing it together, they're not laying out the space in the viewers' heads. Because at one moment they're upstairs, then they're downstairs, then they're back in this place, and they're not showing that transition to a point where I'm like, that shouldn't connect that way, and that shouldn't be that way. This seems weird as far as geography. So there's some geography issues that I had some problems with in how they presented it. But in the end, Will is taking his ex-wife outside. She wanted to be outside to die, I guess, for whatever reason.
Yeah, for whatever reason.
Well, there is a reason. So Will and Gina go out there, and then Ben joins them. And then as they're in the backyard, they hear, you know, sirens coming. They're like, oh, God, thank God somebody called the cops, and their cops are on their way, and this is all going to be over. And then they hear a scream and a gunshot, and they look out over the hills, and there's all these red lanterns just covering the hills.
Yeah.
And presumably not just in the hills, but all throughout Los Angeles and maybe all throughout the country.
Yeah, they said like it was really big in New York and LA, so you can imagine New York being covered too.
I remember them
saying that like offhandedly.
Yeah, I would imagine that that is probably the case too. But, you know, at the end, that's just cops are going to be busy. You hear helicopters and sirens and stuff going off, and you hear all of these screams and shots, and you just see all these red lanterns all over the Hollywood Hills. And you know that, oh my God, they're not this was not an isolated incident. This is a giant cult.
Which was, that moment was great because
I like that twist.
When Will watches David light that red lantern, I'm like, oh, wouldn't it be freaky if you saw all these red lanterns just pop up? I'm like, and it would have been like a good moment then, but I think it would have given it away too quick.
Yeah, I think.
And then at the end, it happened. I'm like, oh, it was so good.
Yeah, because then, you know, at the end, the movie reads as a dinner party gone wrong, right? So there's a trope right there. And but the fact that at the end, it turns out to be this massive killing spree turns it into a real horror. A real horror movie, because originally I would just classify this as a thriller.
Yeah.
But then when you get into this thing of the big reveal, it's like, holy crap, this is a horror movie. And this is kind of like, you know, this is what leads to a 28 days later, some kind of, you know, like people are being, you know, there's a sequel where everybody's hiding out because there's these roving bands of whatever the invitation people going around killing stuff. And I can see some cheesy sequels being proposed on this. But it was really nice kind of shocker, and it was a nice kind of twist, and it didn't feel forced, and it didn't feel like some kind of tacked on thing that you're just like, oh, really? So it was very good from that kind of a reveal and the slow burn that it gets, that it takes to get to that final 15 minutes of the movie. It is an hour and a half movie. And I got to say, honestly, 10 minutes in, I was like, what the F is Zach getting me into? Because this movie is so slow
it's so
boring at this point.
Yeah.
And that, but I think the payoff is worth it because it just kind of builds and it drops these clues and you have to really pay attention to this. And so I think it's well done from that standpoint, but it's a slow pace.
It's very slow.
It could have been a 65 minute movie, I think, in some places.
Yeah, I think it could be, but I don't think the payoff would have been as, I think it would have been like too quick.
Yeah.
To get to that point. And I don't think everything would have been as good.
There was just some stuff at the beginning where everyone's sitting around talking. I mean, I guess in Will catching up with all of his friends and then them saying, oh, Will, how you doing? And him asking how they're doing. And you can sense that everybody's experiencing some kind of loss, although not everybody's experiencing loss. I mean, one of the guys, I forget what his name is.
Oh, the one that Will started a company with or whatever, the bigger dude.
Maybe him. Yeah. You get the sense that he's not really gone through anything because his wife's at home with the kids.
Yeah, they just like don't get along.
Yeah,
that's all he said.
I mean, that's it. And so you don't see like why is he being brought into this cult unless they're trying to kill a certain number.
Yeah.
Let's kill a certain number of people. Everybody has a quota of people that they have to kill.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's really weird, but it makes you, I don't know, it freaks me out because, you know, there are religious groups still around today and cults. Cults are a form of a religion.
Yeah.
They all start out as some religion, but then whatever. Small religions are considered cults.
Yeah.
But they all start out with some of these like, oh, the earth is going to end on such and such a date. Mm-hmm. And you got people saying it's going to end on 2011. And then that date comes here. It's like, oh, we miscalculated. It'll be 2012. And it kind of gets you kind of concerned, right? I mean,
it got me probably too weirdly interested in reading about like these death cult type things because that's what I found really interesting about the invitation in the way that I perceived it as potentially Will is just too paranoid and reading too much into these things and that these people were fine because it never came across of like there's a comet and we got to catch a ride on the, you know, the alien ship on the comet.
That's Heaven's Gate.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Or it didn't seem too crazy for
it seemed like
normal, like they just did a bunch of meditation and they kind of got through some stuff.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like they're doing anything like the Kresh compound, but it also doesn't feel like they're doing anything like the Westboro people.
Yeah.
Here it just doesn't feel like that kind of stuff.
No.
And it also doesn't come across as quote unquote religion.
No,
like we saw in Kevin Smith's Red Statement.
Yeah, it seems like it's sans more, religion, it's spiritual type kind of things.
Yeah, yeah, transcendentalism or whatever. But
yeah, and that's what was interesting. And there was a thing I got fixated on and why I had to go back and watch it again, because I was trying to figure out what like the directors or the director was trying to say through all this, because there was one line I got fixated on. I'm like, is the underlying concept of what these people are believing in is that you can move on past death, and death is, you can be okay with it, and you know, there's some, maybe there's something
after. I think
there was a line that I fixated on, which was when he came out and we're talking about the coyote, and they were like, oh, how'd you do it? It seems so like primal or whatever, right, to kill a coyote. Right. And so I knew some character said, no, it was mercy putting
right,
it
right.
out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So I thought it was one of the two guys. I thought it was the doctor.
It was one of the doctors.
It wasn't
boyfriend.
Though. Oh, because I thought if that was that's what they said. They're like, oh well, then it really is mercy letting all these, like, especially the really emotionally distraught people die, so they can, you know, go on. But it actually was David that said it. I'm like, oh well, that makes way more sense.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what they're trying to get at, is you're suffering through so much pain here.
Yeah,
and you know, when you release your spirit here, you're going to go someplace better, and you'll all be happy. Tea time and cakes, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be that. And that's not, you know, it's like, but of course, we got to kill you first. And
right.
but I'm, you know, if you think about what they were doing in their murder of their friends, if Will had not thrown away everyone's drinks and freaked out,
yeah,
everyone would have just died at
they
the
all
table.
Would have died.
And they probably would have gone very quickly, just like what's her name? The friend probably would have gone just very quickly and have been done with it. So I guess they were trying to be humane in the way of killing their friends and perhaps themselves. But then when it got out of hand, it's like, okay, well, here's plan B.
Well, yeah,
let's just hack everybody to death and shoot them.
It's not like, oh, just sit, we're going to hold you down and restrain you. Just pour it down your mouth. We're just going to brutally murder you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it got really crazy. Like, what were they telling them to do? Like, we all just have to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it gets
and crazy. You're familiar with the Jim Jones thing, right? Drink the Kool-Aid and...
Yeah, the Kool-Aid,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because there are just some weird things that really creep me out, especially when people are like, hey, come into our meeting this weekend and we're going to talk about all these things together. I'm like, I don't want to come to your meeting.
Yeah, I don't
come
know
to your
you.
Weird thing on, you know, on whatever day of the week you're, quote unquote, you know, praying or worshiping or whatever. And it just kind of bothers me, especially when it's not. And again, this is what, you know, what becomes religion and what is a cult, right? How many people does it take to become a religious affiliation that's large enough to be, okay, they're safe? Because obviously this invitation cult has millions of members that are just willing to kill people left and right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It just, it's creepy. And I probably will not go to anybody's dinner party for a long, long
especially
time.
They send you an invitation in the mail.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So, interesting things about this on the production side.
Yeah.
It was shot in 20 days in one location, and they shot it in order. So this movie was shot sequentially, which was interesting, but it also, I think, allows the actors to build up to this intense moment.
Mm-hmm.
Only cost him $1 million,
really?
Which was the budget for this, the total
really
budget
good.
On this movie. Yes, but to date, it's only brought in $67,000. It was bought by Drafthouse Films for distribution for $3 million. So from... what's her? I'm sorry, Karen Kusama.
Yeah,
they've made their money back on.
They did great.
They did great, and hopefully, people are buying this through iTunes or through the on demand service that it's out now. It just came out recently.
I think just like maybe a week or two ago.
The other thing that's interesting is that this movie was funded through. Let me find it here, from Game Changer Films, and
yeah,
Game
I've never
Changer
heard of
Films
before.
Is. American company that finances independent films that are specifically directed by women or co-directed by women.
Interesting.
And so we've got Karen and we've got Game Changer Films, and they're doing most of the funding for this because she's a female director. Mm-hmm. And I guess what's interesting about this is because of the gender inequality in Hollywood and especially with money inequality, compensation that's been going on in Hollywood for probably the last year. It's really fascinating to learn about Game Changer Films and to see something like this that is so well done and just go, yes, this is exactly what we need more of.
Yeah.
And so I really got a kick out of that too. So,
yeah. And I did what I read that the director in an interview said that she really wanted a small crew. Mm-hmm. And then her producer's like, everyone thinks they want a small crew until they start shooting. Mm-hmm. And so she like took their advice and they said, we always had just like 30 or 40 people just kind of waiting and just like kind of walking around and doing odd jobs so they could actually get through their scenes faster. Cause I mean, 20 mm-hmm. day shoots pretty quick. And I think they did like a 3-day rehearsal. And they had to do some changes to the script. They said one interesting one she noted was the dinner scene.
Mm-hmm.
The house they chose didn't have a dining room on the main floor. It was up the stairs.
Right.
And she said it made an interesting transition for the film because then they all had to move from the main level up to the second one to go to this dinner, which was when I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, it did seem like a change in the story because it was... you know, like kind of weirdly tense there for a second. And then they go upstairs and everything seemed fine. Like they got this big lavish meal. And they're all just kind of talking. Everyone always has fun eating supper.
Dinner.
And then it got really bad.
Yeah. It's really fast. It's dark too. That's the other thing is.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that they had that many crew members on here because I would have figured this would have been like a 15 member crew maybe at most.
Yeah.
Because, there's not a whole lot of, additional lighting. I would like to see some behind the scenes images from this because it did not look like there was a lot of additional lighting added to a lot of these scenes. It looked like they were using very natural light and using cameras. And I never found
what they were shooting on.
Yeah. I was looking for that as well. And maybe one of our listeners knows, but it seemed like they were using as much natural light as they could or whatever practical lights that they had. And there are times, especially right there at the end where they're in that one room, which again has not been established before that we've seen. And so I'm like, where are they in the
house? Like the theater?
I don't know, wherever they were trying to get out that door.
Yeah, like, they went into like a screening theater
room.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I didn't know what it was because it was so dark. It was hard to see. And I watched this on my computer, not in the home theater, which, you know, the home theater's nice, but sometimes the blacks get really black in there. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, this is dark and I can't see what's going on.
Yeah, it was the only time they were ever in that room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a theater they had in the house. Yeah, but it was interesting that was like the room they go to. I went back and was watching a little bit of it. And actually, I got through the whole thing, and then I just saw some screen grabs,
mm-hmm.
and I noticed something in the coloring that I thought was interesting, because it was, everyone always bring up the entire film,
right.
that we're in L.A., like, things like this happen, it's L.A., people are weird, just, you know, let it happen, something mm-hmm. a character said at one mm-hmm. point. And, you know, it was probably, maybe 2 years ago now, that we had a conversation about how L.A. had changed all of their light bulbs from, mm-hmm. like, the tungsten into... what they do, LED lights?
Yeah.
The blue LEDs?
Right.
And so that changed like this classic look of LA. Everyone mm-hmm. talks about they had a look. And if you go back and look through this film, it's all very orange, yellow, that kind of LA. Like, oh, that's really interesting because it's not something you can see anymore
mm-hmm.
if you go out and shoot natural LA.
Right.
So I thought that was really interesting that they kind of went
all
that way.
It was all indoors. Of course, the house is... The house is a house that was probably built in the 1960s or something, and mm-hmm. they've been gone. And so the house has got a very retro feel to it. So I can understand why let's enhance everything with this very, very orange
mm-hmm.
light. And it's very orange. I mean, it's not like they tried to color balance anything.
No.
To make it look, quote unquote natural. I mean, it has a very orange hue throughout, which is something I noticed as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was trying to find some behind the scenes productions stuff, but I don't see anything.
Yeah, I haven't really found. I was trying to find anything on the production of like equipment and things. I just mm-hmm. couldn't. I mean, it's not like too big of a movie. That's not like every movie. Sometimes I have problems finding stuff on big blockbuster films right away. Yeah.
Well, of course, you know, if the movie budget is really small. You always find out about it because people are like, hey, look what we did with $1 million. Or Kevin Smith is like, hey, look what I did with $65,000 or whatever they did for Red State.
Yeah.
And again, if people haven't listened to the Red State podcast, go back and listen to that because it's fascinating to hear Kevin talk about the whole production
process.
Oh,
that series? Yeah. Oh, it's one of the best things to listen to.
And then if you hear a movie that has an incredibly high budget, like Avatar mm-hmm. or Star Wars, and Star Wars, we don't even know what the budget was on that. But if you hear like Avatar, it's a $250 million film. Yeah, if it's really big, then you hear people talk about that. But if it's just an average film release, it can be really hard to find out what the budget was. And unless it's done something incredible, mm-hmm. you don't often see a lot of coverage on just minor little films.
No.
This one I would like to see more coverage on because It's not one that I had heard of. You sent me, because I guess you're starting to come to grips with your horror experience. Is that
I'm
why?
I don't know what it is. I guess it is.
Your little movie theater
my
incident.
My incident of
and
screaming.
Then all of a sudden you're like, hey man, check out these two trailers. And
I'm
going to show
how tough
movies.
I am.
Look at me. I'm a big guy. Ooh. And then you're like, let's watch. You were like, hey, let's watch a movie. I was like, all right, pick a movie. And you pick this one. And I was like, okay. And as at the end, I was like, oh man, crap. This is a scary, intense film.
It is
film.
Scary.
And then Zach tweeted me back like, 20 minutes later, he's like, holy effing crap. I was like, I didn't know if I needed to rush over and calm you down or anything, or
man,
if you were going to be able to sleep through the night.
I was watching this with Aubrey, and that turn happened at the end, and she's no, I'm done. Like, you can either, like, you have to stop watching it, or you have to turn it down.
Right.
Because I'm not going to be by myself now, so we're stuck together for the rest of the night, and you just got to make this. I'm like, there's only like 10 minutes left. Just let me get through
it. Right.
Yeah, because it was such a hard turn. Yeah, but I would really be interested to know what they shot on, because obviously it's going to be digital with a million budget. Of course, Primer's budget was like nothing,
right?
Which the movie never really talked about. But right. he shot on like six rolls of film or something.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, it's a little bit different, and I would imagine that, you know, it's not hard to rent a Red or an Ari. I mean, today you and I can,
especially
just,
for 20 days or whatever.
Yeah, even that. I mean,
that
what where did you get your lenses from recently?
Borrowlens.com. Yeah.
There's also Lens Pro to Go, which is a rental house.
Yeah.
Let's
or you
see.
Can get them from like Adironda and stuff like that.
I'm just looking for. Let's look at professional cameras. There's the brands. They have the Red. Yeah,
they
have
a
Red
package.
Hold on. Yeah. Let me look. So we could get a Red camera. Oh, they have everything broken down in a bunch of different things. And
oh,
I think these
are
actual prices. I was looking for rental.
Because do they have rental on there?
I don't see rental. Sorry, I'm just looking, and I see video, and I see brands, cameras, lenses, lighting.
Yeah, they just, if you click on it, it should give you like a 3-day price
rental?
Or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, here's one that's reserved. 7 days for $2,000 for a Red. Now, that's just the body. That doesn't include the accessory. So by the time you're all done, you're looking at $150, $460, $1,200. So for $5,000 for 7 days is basically what I'm looking at this for the whole package. $5,000 for 7 days. You can rent a Red camera.
Mm-hmm.
You could also spend $5,000 and get a Canon digital SLR for that same price. But I mean, so if you take that times 20, 5,000 times 20, that's $100,000, right? 5,000 times 20.
We only need to do by like three because it's for 7 days.
Oh, right, right. But I'm saying 20 days of the shoot.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah, you're not in much. Even you could parse it down with a lens set. You can only rent like three lenses and you could get the Canon cinema lenses off that site and you could be rolling and get everything else you need and you're not in it too deep.
Well, and then so whatever they had for location, we don't know whose
house
they got for the location. If it was even, you know, it's probably something nobody was living in. Mm-hmm. So it was probably something that was for sale. So they're getting some location money, maybe $10,000 to rent the house for a month, $20,000 to rent the house for a month. And then if all the actors are working on scale or less, and then the crew is working for scale or less, $1 million seems super reasonable.
Yeah, you just got to buy a bunch of pizza and stuff.
Well, I'm sure with 30 people, they've got a little bit more than that going on. But
a craft crew.
Yeah, I mean, but still, it's not that big of a deal. It really isn't. I'm looking at Lens Pro to Go. You can get a Canon XA20 HD camcorder for $130 for a 4-day rental. Wow. Oh, here we go. Here's a Canon 14mm T3.1 Cine lens, $220 for a 4-day rental. That's totally worth it.
No. Yeah, I mean, the prices for these high-quality cameras to rent for a couple days are, like, really, really reasonable.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So I guess it's always, like, I always get encouragement with, like, if I get on there, I'm like, oh, if someone is like, I need 7 days to shoot something or even like 4 days and we can do it super quick and you could do it. Like it's,
oh yeah,
the prices are there now. Like anyone can do anything. It's crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just very fascinating to, see all this stuff. So, but yeah, I'm not seeing anything that says what they shot it on.
Oh yeah. which was unfortunate. I mean, that's always just our weird, mm-hmm. nerdy thing that we like.
I really like this movie. I think Kasama did a great job. I think, and if you go back and read, there's a great interview with her on her career over at, I think, The Verge is where I read an interview with her. And it's really long, but it talks about every single one of her films. She's only done 4 films.
Yeah.
The first one she did, Girl Fight, came in. Everybody loved that. It was a good film for her. Then she did Aeon Flux, which was a total bomb and kind of really ruined her career for a while. But then they gave her the chance to do Jennifer's Body, which I guess was an okay film. Mm-hmm. And then you've got The Invitation. And I really think that this is a good film.
It's getting, which is really interesting because the critic reviews of it are really high on Rotten mm-hmm, Tomato. Mm-hmm. And then like audience reviews, everything I've seen is all like 60%, 70%,
and
which
I think
is really
it's because it's such a slow burn. But I think if, yeah, really, and that's why I think if they could trim out, even if they could trim out like 15 minutes from the movie, I think that they could, I think it could be much better. I think it'd be much more intense for people. But I think in this, to get into Will's mindset, you have to play it slow.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I reflected on after watching it was like, at first I was like, oh crap, an hour and a half. How am I going to get through this? Because this is really boring in the first 10 minutes. And then because he's just kind of walking through it. But then at the end, you realize it has to be this slow so you can get into Will's mindset so you can experience his paranoia and feel that paranoia yourself. So you can, when it does happen, you're like, oh, it actually happened. And it's mm-hmm. not just crazy man being crazy. That's when you get that payoff. So yeah, from the critical standpoint, yes. From the audience standpoint, maybe not so much.
So you mentioned Claire who left early. And like, did she live and stuff? And I was always wondering, like, because she kind of backs out and seems fine. And then Pruitt goes and talks to her behind like a wall you can't see.
You never see the car fully out of the shot because, I mean, you see the car move behind the wall.
Yeah.
And you see Pruitt yell and go around to the car to her. You never see the car drive away after that. You're only seeing it from Will's perspective. And David distracts him like almost immediately.
Right. Someone, I was on IMDb mm-hmm. and someone was talking about it. And they said they were at a showing of it. And the director and the screenwriters came up and that was asked. And they didn't say directly. They go, what happened is what you think happened. And they just kind of left it at that, kind of insinuating that Pruitt somehow killed her.
I think he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like, even like, so crazy.
Yeah.
Like you killed someone even out on like the road.
Yeah. I think because it shows at the end where he is trying to choke out Will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably what he did to her is choked her out. Because he comes in and he's kind of a little out of breath when he comes in.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, okay, well, I said goodbye to her. And it's like, oh, okay, creepy dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just a freaky weird thing.
So did you ever think that Will was just being paranoid like through the whole dinner? Like, especially after the boyfriend, he like freaks out, like, where is he? I know he was here. He called me.
One of the girls is complaining about her boyfriend's not there. Choi is not there.
Yeah.
And throughout the whole movie, she's like, where the hell is Choi? And of course, they're up in the hills. So cell phone reception is horrible. And yes, at the moment when Will says, where is Choi? I got this message from Choi that said he was here before everyone else. Where's he at? Where's he at? Where's he at? And everyone's like, you're crazy, man. And he's like, no, because when you hear that message, you're like, oh crap. Oh,
like they
ate him for dinner or something like that.
He's in an office.
He's strung up dead somewhere mm-hmm. in an office. And then Choi walks in. He's like, sorry, I got called back down to go do some work. Sorry, I'm late. And then at that point I was like, maybe he's just overreacting and paranoid and he needs to have this final concluding thing. And that's when he goes to his son's room after that mm-hmm. and has his catharsis and has his closure. And you feel, okay, maybe that's all he really needed was to have that moment. And all of his craziness is here. And maybe at the end, everyone's going to clink glasses and he was going to leave changed. You know, if you took out that horror aspect of the actual killing that happens, you could read that film as, yes, this man got super paranoid because he's dealing with his grief mm-hmm. and everyone's dealing with grief in their own way. As these cult members have pointed out to everybody that they're all dealing with their pain in different ways. This was his way of dealing with it. You have now, as an audience, gone through Will's grieving process. And now he's in at the end and everyone clinks glasses and they drive off into the night with what a weird party that was.
Yeah.
Right. And if that were the case, that would have been it would have really truly been an art house film.
Oh yeah. Right? It would have been a pretty disappointing, unless that somehow they make it weird with her, him actually killing that girl when she came at him, Sadie, when he came at him, like, and that played out something weird. But if it just would have been like, you were paranoid and then let's all go home, that would have been like a really disappointing ending.
It would have been, but I could see that really playing out as an, as kind of a, as one of these arty films would be, where it's like, okay, someone's paranoia goes so far until you have that, that moment of clarity where it's finally, you have resolved all your issues. And once you've resolved all your issues, then you can move past, which is kind of what the cult was trying to get across, you know? And, but yeah, then it doesn't turn out that way. So yeah, there was that one moment when Choi finally showed up. I was like, okay, where the hell are they going with this movie?
Yeah, of course. And then I obviously was so bought in because I still thought, oh, she's foaming at the mouth, bad cocaine.
Like, that I knew the minute that she was foaming at the mouth. I was like, it's poison. He's right. Ah!
Yeah. And, yeah, and then I was still like, well, maybe. And then the gunshot, I'm like, oh, God, no, this is going to get bad. This is going to get bad real fast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So would you recommend this to people?
I would, but I think we've ruined the movie for people.
Well, probably.
yeah. You know, if you have not seen this movie and we've just ruined it for you, then I'm sorry. But we did put a spoiler up at the beginning of the episode, so be aware of that. But yeah, I think I would really recommend this to people, and I would really recommend it to people who are, who maybe be okay with the spoiler, knowing what's going to happen. And because maybe even knowing going in what's going to happen, maybe that'll make you be more alert to Will's situation.
Yeah.
And so you can watch those things a little closer and maybe pull out some more nuance from the acting and from the story that's being told. But if, and maybe if you're watching it with a significant other or some, a friend of yours or friends who have, are not aware of what this movie is about, and then get their reaction to it, I'd love to hear those stories.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear what the audience's reaction to this, but yes, as much as I went into it going, ugh, an hour and a half film that's as slow as that other piece of crap that we watched, I don't know if I can make it. And then totally getting kicks out of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is always my turmoil of iTunes movies. It's like, I can rent it for $7 or I can buy it for $10.
I just always buy because.
Yeah, I usually do too. But Aubrey's like, it's a suspense film. You're not going to watch it again. You're going to know the twist. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I'll just rent it. And so I rented it and then I bought it this morning. It's like, well, I got to watch it like three more times because this movie's too good.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually just, when it comes to iTunes, I'm like, I think there's only been one movie that I rented. It was a time travel movie that came out not too long ago. And I rented it because it was the only option. And I really, really wanted to see this film because it. The trailer looked like totally Blade Runner kind of weird stuff. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I got to check this film out. It's only available for rental. Okay, I will rent it. And now I've forgotten what the name of the film is, so now I can't go buy it. So, I've only done rentals a couple of times, and it's only because I want to see the movie now. Otherwise, if it's an option of rent or buy, like with The Invitation, or what's the other film that you were wanting us to watch?
Darling.
Which I haven't looked at.
I haven't either.
You know, if it's the option, it's like, well, I might as well buy it because you never know what, you know, what could happen with this. So I don't know. It was worth
it. Yeah, I definitely, if you have a chance to watch this in the theater, you should go on. I think it's actually on Amazon now. I thought I saw it on IMDb. You should definitely check it out and buy it and freak all of your friends out with this movie. Cause it was, I really enjoyed the ride. It definitely has a slow, super slow burn to the end, but it was one of the most worthwhile twists I've seen in a film for a long time.
Let me recommend, because next week we still have another week or two before.
Nothing's really coming out next week.
Let me recommend a movie then for us to watch called Time Lapse.
Okay.
It's called Time Lapse. It's 2014. It stars Danielle Panabaker, who is Dr. Caitlin Snow on Flash. It's got Matt O'Leary in it. It's got George Finn, John Rhys-Davies, and a bunch of other people in it. It's another one that's kind of like this, where it's kind of like a thriller suspense thing. Time travel is involved with it, so you do have to kind of be aware of that. It is available on iTunes now, and so people can check it out. It's got a 6.4 rating out of 10 up on the IMDb. I don't know what the Rotten Tomatoes score is right now, but it was kind of another independent film that is low budget, takes place in California, has a time travel element to it, and a twist. So
I think I've seen... You may have seen parts of this. I don't think I've seen it.
The trailer is really good. The trailer will suck you in.
I think I've seen the trailer.
And then you're like, oh, what is this? Definitely.
All right.
Let's do that for next
week. Let's do that for next week. That'll be a fun time. Time lapse next week on Zach on Film. Hope you enjoy this episode, everyone. Head over to majorspoilers.com where you can put all of your comments about The Invitation in this podcast posting page. While you are there, click on the Amazon.com link where you can buy all of your favorite suspense movies. on Blu-ray. It's not going to cost you any extra when you use that link, but a little bit will come back to Major Spoilers to help all of these great podcasts come into your ears each and every week. So next week, we'll be watching Time Lapse on Zach on Film.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.